good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet 104.6. Shalom, Jules.
Morning, Jan.
Shalom, Mike.
Shalom.
How are you both?
I'm very well, thank you.
In form, I hope.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Okay, let's go.
And good morning, Richard.
Oh, good morning, Richard. I already said good morning.
So did I.
Start telling me what to do. Anyway, what are you going to chat about today?
Well, before we chat, we have to have the usual rule. We have to tell a story. Always tell us a joke so that we can laugh. But this is a story about proving that you have to tell a joke before you get going. And the story is Jackie Mason. Jackie Mason was a rabbi, and he found that attendances in shul were diminishing until one day when he gave a sermon, he told a joke, and a lot of people laughed. So the next week when he did the sermon, he told two jokes, and people laughed. And the following week, he found that a few more people were coming to shul.
To listen to jokes.
To listen to the jokes. And after a few months, the shul was full. It's a true story. And then he tells a story. He says, well, after a while, he says, I had complaints from the congregation that they couldn't get in to come to service because non-Jews were coming to the shul to hear the jokes.
I like that.
Appeals to you.
Yeah. So, Jules tells me that I first met him when I was the MC of a wedding for a boy who has the same name as me, Michael Silverman, my cousin.
Correct.
And this was in the year 2000, I think, in Wellington.
In Wellington.
Now, this is such a memorable event that I don't remember it at all.
Well, good thing there are two of us.
But Jules and I have come to know each other very well over the last, what, 3 years, five years? 3 years or so. And we share a love of humour and jokes. And the thing is, we both know a lot of jokes, and it seems we both know each other's jokes, all of them. There's very rarely that each of us have told one that the other doesn't know.
So how come you're still laughing at my jokes?
Because he's polite.
Very polite. I'm a gentleman, yeah. So we got to the point where when we were alone, we still love to tell jokes, but, you know, we're busy people and time is valuable. So we basically gave all the jokes we know a number. So Jules would say to me,
4,985.
Yeah. And I'd laugh, oh, yeah, I like that one. And I'd say 24, and he'd go, yeah, terrific. And the other day I said to him, 92. And he absolutely fell about on the floor. It was 10 minutes before I could get any sense out of him. And I said, what's going on? He said, I haven't heard that one before.
So, but there was also the guy who goes to a group where they're telling jokes and they've heard it before and it's all by number. So he says, oh, that's amazing. Can I try? So the guy says, the host says, sure. So he says, 75, silence. He says, 2, silence. 92, silence. So he says to those, what's going on here? He says, it's the way you tell the joke. right, on to business.
Oh, no, sorry that people can't see Mike's hand gestures.
I'm Jewish, which one?
It's a disadvantage of radio.
Yeah, it's a disadvantage. I'd ask you to put your mind and get Mike's face in front of you and think of his arms.
Right. Well, the thing is, if you tied my arms behind my back, I wouldn't be able to speak.
What number was that?
74B, that is. Yeah. So his was 92B because he had the different version of my one.
Okay, let's get on with it.
Yeah, so there's a very famous Jewish psychologist, Professor Jules Gaddy. He got a PhD at Witwatersrand University in persiflage.
So you're up with the play, Mike.
I'm going to let
definitely
Jules explain what persiflage is. Go ahead, Jules.
So persiflage is simply light, written, or oral bantering.
So
that's it.
So persiflage. Saving time, you just say
persiflage.
Persiflage. But you know, I can say, well, Mike, how can you got a pimple on your nose? And he will say to me, well, it's a good thing I got a nose. So, you know, we're just bantering.
So that really,
it's not insulting.
So this is the art of banter.
It is. So that's what we're going to do. So, you know, we're going to do sort of two things. We're going to talk about storytelling and we're going to talk about debate. Now, Professor Jules Gaddy basically says that storytelling is the best way to make speech making memorable. And that's, and a debate is another form of speech making, but let's talk about storytelling first.
By storytelling, you're not referring to lies.
No. Just telling stories, okay. Or making a speech, but making a speech or a statement using storytelling. And I'll tell you two stories. When I was at Cheder, when I was a young kid, the rabbi said to everybody, okay, tell me what your favourite Bible story is. And Bradley Meisel put his hands up and said, ask me, Rabbi. So he said, okay, Bradley, what's your favourite Bible story? He says, it's the story about the flea.
So I can see something funny coming up. So
the rabbi thought hard and hard and hard. He said, I know my chumash, and I really can't think of a story about the flea. Tell me. So he said, it's when Hashem came to Abraham and said, take up thy baby and flee.
Now, I have to make an admission. I have not heard that one before. And may I use it in the future?
What's mine is yours, and what's yours is
yours. Well, let us begin at the beginning. You want to tell your second story first, or should I tell
my first story first?
It's not a story, it's a beginning.
Okay.
And the beginning is this. Tell me a story, tell me a story, tell me a story, remember what you said. You promised me, you said you would. You gotta give in so I'll be good. Tell me a story, then I'll go to bed. Who made that song famous?
No, I don't know.
Frankie Lane. Frankie Lane, Jewish.
Was he?
Yeah, he was born Frank Abelson, changed his name.
Right.
And he was an entertainer for, I don't know how long, but 70 years. So why am I singing the song? Because this...
Well, you used that expression loosely, I assume. I was going to ask you if you can whistle.
This is persiflage.
Banter, exactly.
Banter. So it's tell me a story. The little kid is saying to his father, tell me a story. Because it's important to him. So stories are important. Then he says, tell me a story, remember what you said. So obviously the father said he's going to tell him a story, and that's like the reason why he should go to bed. So there's always a substance to a story. And then he says, you promised. Promises in Judaism are very important. And then he says, if you tell me a story like you said you would, I'll be good. So, yeah, you're bribing me, and if you bribe me, it's good to bribe me. You know, I'm your son, you love me, and then I'll be good. And when that all happens, I'll go to bed. Isn't that the epitome of all stories? It's fact-based, it's motivation-based, it's promise-based. Right, I've said my piece. We can carry on now.
Okay.
That was
all right. That's it, yeah. No, there's more to come.
I thought there'd be a punchline, but there you go.
I was waiting for the punchline.
I know you were. I was too. So my maternal grandfather, Aaron, was a cousin, and he came from Galicia, which is a place that no longer exists, but it was in what, when he was born, was the Austro-Hungarian Empire, sort of very southern Poland, northern Czechoslovakia. So it was a place where a lot of Jews lived, and obviously not anymore. It's kind of in the sort of the borders of the Carpathian Mountains, so the home of Dracula. Anyway, that's another story. But One of the very famous stories from that time that got passed down to me was that there was a rumour going through the forest that the bear had a death list. So the fox went to the bear and said, "Is it true you've got a death list?" And the bear said, "Yes." So the fox said, "Am I on it?" And the bear said, "Yes, you are." He said, "Well, can I go home and say goodbye to my family before you kill me?" And the bear said, "Yes, but you come straight back." So the fox went home, said goodbye to his family, came back, and the bear killed him. And then the wolf went to the bear and said, "There's a rumour going round that you have a death list." The bear said, "Yes." He said, "Am I on it?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Can I make my goodbyes to my loved one first?" He said, "Yes, but come straight back." So the wolf went home, made his goodbyes to his loved ones, came back, and the bear killed him. And then the rabbit, Jaime the rabbit.
Jaime.
I mean, rabbits aren't kosher, really, so, but there you go.
No.
Anyway, Jaime the rabbit. So, or maybe
but
we should call him...
humans also aren't kosher.
True. We should have called him Chutzpah the rabbit, as you'll hear. So Chutzpah the rabbit goes to the bear and says, "Hey, Mr. Bear, I hear you've got a death list." And the bear says, "Yep." He says, "Am I on it?" He said, "Yep." He said, "Would you take me off it?" He said, "Sure. No problem." So, one, there's chutzpah there.
Yes.
And two, there's a lesson. And the lesson is... never ignore the obvious.
Never ignore the obvious. Sometimes the obvious is not seen. It's not obvious.
Yeah.
But you're right. Never ignore the obvious. Yeah. Never ignore the simple stuff that's staring you in the face.
Absolutely. And, you know, a Jewish way is, you know, a Jewish sort of mantra.
Didn't always work.
No. But if you don't ask, you don't get.
Correct.
Exactly. So, correct. You know, that's
don't
a Jewish
ask,
way. Now, Jules, we're talking about persiflage.
Mm.
Now,
well, you are.
Yeah, well, you're the professor of it.
PhD.
But in all the sort of our sessions we've done with Joan before, we've been buddy-buddy, haven't we? We've exchanged jokes, we've been arms around each other, good pals. But I think we've got a bit too comfortable. And so...
we'll take a vote on this.
I think, you know, we need to sort of up the ante a bit in the banter stakes.
Right, and I more think, challenges.
Yes, I that's why we talked about debate.
Yeah.
So I think we should have a debate. Now, we're not going to do the debate today.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do it in another session. But first of all, what is debate? Well, it's not what you put on the end of the fishing line.
Well, there are two kinds. There's a Jewish debate and there's the other debate.
All right. Well, let me tell you an ancient story about a silent debate. It comes from this is a very ancient story, comes from the time of the Spanish Inquisition. A whole village of Jews were banished from the shtetl in the Pale of Settlement, and after wandering for many years all through Europe, they finally came to southern Spain, where they found a great city, and they wanted to make a permanent home outside the walls of this great city. But the king was not best pleased, because he was a Roman Catholic and they were Jewish. They were not of the true faith. So he banished them. But the rabbis appealed. Well, the king was a fair man, so he said, very well, but they must earn the right to stay. So he said, I'll challenge them to a debate. Well, the rabbis agreed, but the king was also a cruel man, for he then set three conditions. One, the debate must take place without speaking. Two, the representatives of the Jews must be a young boy. And three, the debate would be with the king's archbishop, who would have the final say. So on the appointed day, a young Jewish boy appeared at the court before the king and all his courtiers, and up stood the imposing figure of the archbishop, who began by holding up three fingers. The boy responded immediately by holding up one finger. The archbishop then put his hand above his head and waved his hand in a circle, and the boy pointed at the floor. The archbishop then took out a flagon of wine and a wafer, and the boy produced an apple. The archbishop thought for a moment, then turned to the king and said, "I have lost. The boy has won. The Jews must stay." The boy was dismissed. The courtiers all ran to the king, who turned angrily on the archbishop and said, "What happened? What was said? How did you lose?" And the archbishop said, "I raised three fingers to show that we believe in the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost." And the boy replied with one finger, saying, "Yes, but there is only one God whom we all share. I waved my hand in the air to show you that God is all around us." And the boy said, pointing at the floor, "Yes, and he's here right now by my side. I showed him the wine and the wafer to demonstrate how we do penance for our sins." And the boy produced an apple to show the original sin. I knew then that this Jewish boy had an answer for everything and that I could not possibly win. Meanwhile, the boy went back to the rabbis and they said, "What happened?" And the boy said, "The archbishop told me we've got 3 days to get out," with his three fingers. "And I said, not one of us is leaving." He then waved his hands in the air and said, "If you don't go, the king will send all his troops and clear you from his land." And I pointed at the floor and said, "We're staying right here." The boy leaned back and the rabbi said, "Well, what happened next?" And the boy said, "I don't know. He took out his lunch, so I took out mine."
It's communication at its best. And you told that story great.
Thank you.
Very good.
That's actually difficult to do on radio because, you know, it's visual.
It's visual.
But so I hope it works.
Well, can we get some feedback from the listeners? Can we get a few hundred tweets to say Mark was great? That would be good. So that story has a basis for it. It has some learning. And that's where storytelling in Judaism starts. It starts with the Torah. The Torah is, we got the commandments and the urban legend, let me say, says that when Moses went up to the mountain, then Hashem gave him the Torah during the day, and at night he explained it to him. Then later on, those explanations were recorded in the Talmud. That's the basis of our storytelling, because we hear the stories and the learning from Moses, and then later on it is put down. The Talmud comprises two parts. The Mishnah, which is the actual oral learning, and the Gemara, which is the rabbi's discussion. So the rabbi's discussion is really absolutely storytelling. They analyze, they tell stories, they cross one section to another section, and if this and if that, and that's really our basis of storytelling. And if you think of the stories that you hear from Jewish comedians, there are many of them who have this background. They don't just stand up and tell a story, you know, like the boy fell in the mud and ha, ha, ha. They tell a story that's got spine in it, it's got backbone, it's got history, it's got observance. And that's why I love storytelling.
Thanks, Jules. That gives me an explanation of a lot of your behavior.
It's more persiflage.
Have you got another one too?
No, I'm going to defer to Jules. I've exhausted my repertoire.
That's not... I don't believe that. Not for a minute.
So this is really, you were going to have more of a debate?
Well, we'll have the debate, but next session, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you want to end with a story, grandfather's got his grandson on his lap, and he's teaching him morality, and he tells him the following story. He says, I have two wolves inside me. One is a very good wolf, and the other one's a very bad wolf, always doing bad things. The good wolf is always doing good mitzvot, and the bad wolf is doing nothing. And the little boy says to him, Grandfather, which one is winning? And he says, whichever one I choose to feed. Good story, yeah. Good morality. That's the kind of story. I love those kind of stories. And that's my repertoire. Unless you want to go for another few hours, I'm okay.
You were talking before about my inability to speak without waving my arms around. There was a cruise liner came out of Israel and traversing the Mediterranean, and it had a lot of Jewish people from Israel and also a big Catholic mission, and it hit something and sank, and the Jewish people all survived and were the only survivors. Everybody else unfortunately drowned. It was a very sad story, but afterwards they were talking to the Jewish people and said, how did you survive in those cold waters? Said, we talked to each other. Said, how did that help? He said, have you ever seen Jews talk without waving their arms around? Kept us afloat.
Right, let me tell you a story about the background to a story or the teaching. This is a story that proves that there is divine providence, that the divine's hand is in everything. And it's a story about the king. I wonder if it's the same king as your king. Could be.
Was he Catholic?
Well, the king, I think, was Catholic. And the king had a friend, and his friend was the rabbi. And he really enjoyed the rabbi's company, especially because the rabbi was always telling him stories, and he was always telling him stories with a background. The rabbi often came to the palace, and he would spend time with the king, and they would tell stories. Then one day the king said he'd like to go horse riding and hunting. And he says to the rabbi, I would like you to come with them. We can chat on the way. And the rabbi says, no, I can't do that. He says, I can't shoot. I don't even know how to hold a gun. So the king says, no problem. We'll show you how to hold the gun. And he prevails upon the rabbi to come. So now they're on horseback and they're in the forest, and the soldiers, the equestrian soldiers are with them. And by mistake, the rabbi who's holding the gun, his finger slips, pulls the trigger, and there's a loud scream. It's the king. And lo and behold, the bullet has hit the king's hand, his finger, and he loses a finger. And the king is mad. He is very angry. And he has the rabbi thrown in jail. The rabbi's in jail, and the king recovers from his lost finger. And now there's another episode. The king goes on another journey, and he does not take the rabbi with him because he's sitting in jail. And on this other journey, it's in a faraway land, and they say to him that he shouldn't proceed any further because the people in the next piece of land are not nice people. They're very dangerous. But being an awesome, adventurous, brave king, he says, no, I want to go. So he goes, and lo and behold, the people of that land catch him. And they are cannibals, which, of course, is dangerous. And when they come to preparing the meal, which is him, the chief cannibal cook looks at him and sees that he hasn't got a finger, and he declares him unfit for eating. He's not kosher. You can't have somebody who's got a missing finger. And they release him, and he gets back, and comes back to the palace and immediately goes to the jail and has the rabbi released. And the rabbi says, how come? He says, well, divine providence, like you've been telling me, if it hadn't been for you shooting my finger, then I would have been eaten by the cannibals. And the king says, well, and what about you? And he's talking to the rabbi now. He says, what's the divine providence for you? So he says, well, if I hadn't shot your finger off, then I would have been going with you to this place and they would have eaten me.
Too bad. You heard the two cannibals, one said to the other, did you eat that comedian last night? And the guy said, the other says, yes. He said, he tastes funny to you.
It's a tough one.
Where'd you dig them up?
Isn't it amazing that when you're talking and when you're telling stories, then one leads to another and
it reminds
it triggers,
you of.
It triggers.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. The thing is, it triggers sometimes, you know, things that are way off beam.
Yeah.
And also things just occur to you. I was thinking about, you know, I think last week we talked about when I told Reb Natty that I'd been married for nearly 48 years, and he asked me what I was going to be doing for my 50th. Well, only the other day I said to Izzy, my missus, I said, can you believe it that we've been married for 48 years? And I said, you know, sometimes it feels just like sort of 15 minutes. And she said, yes, underwater. Over to you, Jules.
Storytelling progressed in Judaism, and we get to maybe 200-300 years ago, and there was the term, the word Magid. Magid was an itinerant preacher. And what did the preacher do? He told stories. And they were based and steeped in the oral tradition. And we had the most famous was the Magid of Meserich. Meserich, I looked it up. I didn't know where it was. It's actually in the Ukraine. And he lived, I think, at the same time as the Vilna Gaon, who was the genius of Vilna. So the genius of Vilna was just based in study. And this Magid of Meserich, he told stories. And the stories were, again, the same pattern. It was based in the law. Now, on the lighter side of things, we ask, why are Jews so good in business? And here's the story. They're good in business, and the example that I give is there were two guys sitting on the sidewalk in Christchurch, a very Christian city. And one of them had a chain around his neck, and at the end of the chain there was a cross. And the other one had a chain, and at the end of the chain was a mug and dogged. And in front of each of them they had hats. And after a little while, the guy with the cross, his hat was filling up. And a priest walks past, and he looks at them, he looks at the two hats. He goes over to the guy with the mug and dovin, and he says, you know, this is a Christian city. I think you might have got it wrong. And he says, oh. He says, you know, look, this guy with the cross, his hat's filling up. So he says, thanks for telling me. And the priest walks off, and the guy with the mug and dovin leans over to the guy with the cross, and he says, Hanke, he says, he's teaching us marketing.
Thank you, Jules. And thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10. And if you missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom, one word. And we would like to thank our sponsor, Nature B.
We speak your language online at planetaudio.org.in.